session. We're going to move on to item 7A, Public Works Road Department.
We don't want to do consent.
I will. Morning, Board. I'm Tom Beatty. I'm the Director of Public Works and Road Commissioner. And I want to talk to you about a proposal to drop the speed limit on a section of A-12, where it runs in front of Big Springs Elementary School and the main gas station right there. Wendy's handing out maps. They're very busy. But if you could please turn your attention to the two blue X's on that map, that will segment off the area that we want to reduce to 45 miles an hour. The reason why this came up is Big Springs Elementary School reached out to me and asked how they could purchase their own traffic control devices to for 25 mile an hour speed limit zone. That is not something that's allowed. So we looked into it, did a speed study in that area. With the increased volume of traffic going into Mayton and how close that school is to A-12, we feel that we need to have a step down to 45 miles an hour before it goes into the 25 mile an hour zone while school's in session right there.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Any questions from the board?
No, it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion second. Just quick discussion. I know when I first started decades ago and I was working out that way, it was just a white spot. And so now it has built up in the traffic. I can see it justifies this. So, Wendy, roll call.
All righty. Supervisor Hupp?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
I'll be in aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Board.
And my understanding is this will be in effect immediately.
Yes.
Rather than having to wait.
Ms. Pidham, you're up for our consent item that we have. Ms. Kalar, just so you know, we've rearranged a few things. Go ahead, Laura.
Good morning. So I guess there was a question from Supervisor Hal regarding this item. Or question?
Cost.
So the cost will increase because depending on the printing of the number of organizations, it could push it to a two-card ballot, which would double my printing cost for ballots, as well as increase the number of pages in the sample ballot booklets, which would also increase that cost as well. There's only four counties throughout the state that I'm aware of that are going to implement this change and not have the board adopt a resolution, and I think that's L.A., Inyo, and Santa Clara counties.
I'll let you know, first of all, I don't really support this because I think it's really important to the voter to know who's pushing certain things, and it's difficult when you look at a ballot and just look at the argument for or argument against. And for more transparency and less. So that's where I am.
Anyone else from the board? Supervisor Kopseff?
So don't proponents or opponents, aren't they required to pay for their piece in the sample ballot?
No. So that they propose, the arguments for and against a measure are printed at the discretion of the elections official. I think I can print up to the first two, but there is no cost for them to do that.
Really? But yet for the candidate that may be running, it's a cost to them.
Correct.
I'd be more in favor of having them pay their cost.
Well, the cost for the measures would be passed on to the jurisdiction. So if it was a city measure that someone was writing for or against, any of those increased costs that they incur will be passed back to the city or the jurisdiction calling the election. Mm.
But I tend to agree with Supervisor Houghton. I get the cost factor, mm-hmm. but... there's no newspaper in the county. Coverage is light, so I mean, that's kind of the last vestige of being able to get any info. So I don't know how to attack the cost side of it, but I tend to agree with Chris.
So, Mr. Chris,
real quick on the factor really here is just to save money for the pay for the song or in the ballots.
Yes, the same cost for the county as in general. Yes.
What dollar figure are you looking at?
I'd have to go run those costs. That would double the ballot printing costs. Like for the presidential primary next March, we're on an eight-party ballots, and that is the most expensive election we will ever administer. But I could get those costs for the ballot printing if you'd like.
All right. Is it ballpark figure?
The ballots are, I believe, are 34 cents a piece. I have to print, you know, at least, I believe it's 115% of the registered voters, so 115% of 28,000 times 34 cents. Not a mathematician, but.
You need to include ballpark, though. Yeah, I'm kind of on the line. I support that you wanted to save money, but I think it's good for the voters to know who the proponents and opponents are, and they have that knowledge there. Yeah. Thank you, though, for
You're welcome.
Trying
and so,
to balance your budget and all those things. I appreciate that.
Supervisor Arvin?
Same.
I think you're going to see that this isn't going to fly. I think, particularly in the era of transparency, you know, with all the swirls around outside our world, lack of media, I think it's just a cost that we have to bear from my perspective, transparency reasons, because, as stated, there's no newspaper coverage. It's very limited. People tend to be agenda-driven, so I think that's our only avenue, from my perspective, to get whatever the message is out.
Okay.
If you don't mind, we're just going to table this. Thank you.
So maybe come back with another idea of, you know, is there a cost factor that could be put on messaging that would be placed in there? And I don't know if that would prohibit getting that information out either. So.
Yeah, and again, this is because of the Assembly Bill, which I believe did not allow for state mandated reimbursement for any additional cost.
Go figure.
One thought.
Is there some way to mail that part out separately or cheaply?
No, the Assembly Bill, the way it was written, is that it has to be printed on the ballot. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I'll be submitting budget figures to you.
That's fine.
All right. That's
all
right.
Thank you.
So question, are we actually,
dropping
it from the agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And maybe a follow-up, what our decision was on that piece of the budget thing. Okay, let's go to item D, discussion possible action regarding City of Mount Shasta pursue an associated joint jurisdiction enhanced infrastructure financing district.
Good morning, Chairman Valenzuela and Valdez County Administrator. This item before you today is in reference to an enhanced infrastructure financing district, also known as an EIFD, which is a type of a tax increment financing strategy, which is also known as a TIF. So, what a TIF is when a boundary area, project area is designated, that baseline tax, property tax, is frozen. It freezes at that rate for that current year. And then any increase, which usually happens year four, years five, depending upon improvements, those increments, which is an increase in tax, is then put into a fund which is used for improvements for that project area. So, in essence, EIFDs are a type of TIF that promote and help finance economic development, and that's what basically the basis is for EIFDs. I did, when I received an inquiry from the City of Mount Shasta for a request to join in a joint jurisdictional EIFD, I did some research, and currently there are four EIFDs that are joint jurisdictions with a county and a city. However, those counties are County of Los Angeles and Orange County. So the comparables were quite difficult to try to assess and analyze. However, we did attend, myself, Sherry Lawson, and Elizabeth Nielsen attended a presentation by Cosmont, who's kind of the forerunner in EIFDs, at the City of Mount Shasta. And so I included their presentation in your board packet, as well as the fiscal analysis in your board packet. And also I have here today Mr. Todd Uhouse, who is the city manager for the City of Mount Shasta, who can answer any other questions that you may have. So before you today, I have three options. One is to direct staff to move forward with the joint jurisdiction with the City of Mount Shasta, or two, support the City of Mount Shasta to pursue the EIFD as a sole entity, which would mean that we would not have any type of part in that process. Or three, direct staff to look at, research, analyze, annexation of the said designated areas that have been proposed as a request. So with that, if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them or answer any questions for Mr. Newhouse. perhaps.
So, Mr. Juhas, if you want to come up and give your little quick presentation here. So just so you know, for my board, this is just to get an overview, because it can get really in-depth. So we'll go from there after Mr. Juhas goes.
Okay, so this is a little wonky.
So can I get your name just for the record first? Thank you.
Yeah, it's Todd Juhas, city manager of Shasta.
Thank you.
So I just want to make sure you guys understand the concept of tax increment finance. Or do you need me to go into it a little bit?
This is your sales pitch, Mr. Juhas.
Okay.
I brought it here because at your request. So it's
okay. So in most states, we have tax increment finance. In California, they've kind of scaled it back. It limits the kinds of projects that we can spend tax increment finance money on. And it has some differences. Basically, with the city of Mount Shasta, we have the landing, we have the Crystal Geyser site, we've got the orchard, and we have some other parcels that we're examining. And I've got a background up in Portland where I ran a couple urban renewal areas as a development manager for the Portland Development Commission, the South Waterfront area, and Portland State University. And the problem we're facing in Mount Shasta is that we have properties that have sat fallow for 20 years. We've had people come in and kick the tires. I've had people that are interested, and I've been talking to for more than a year and a half. Their issue with these sites is that infrastructure is not in place, and the cost of actually developing these parcels, they don't pencil. In a Class A or a Class B market where you've got the density and you can sell a property for a lot of money, like San Francisco or Sacramento, developers will come in and not bat an eye about putting in that infrastructure because they know they can make their return on investment very quickly. In a Class C market like Mount Shasta, that's most likely not going to happen. And so the only way to get these parcels up and running and on the tax rolls is to kickstart stuff by putting infrastructure in the ground. And we have ways to do it, but the clearest and quickest path is through tax increment finance, or in California, EIFD. So what does that mean? If we were to partner with the county, you go through a long process that I don't want to get into because I'll put everybody to sleep. We have form a board, a public finance board, and we make decisions on what money is to be spent on an area that we define, and those areas don't have to be contiguous. It can be Crystal Geyser, it can be the landing, it can be a whole host of parcels. And the way that money can be used is limited, but it can be used on things like infrastructure. It can be used on, fuels reduction, hardening sites for fires, wildfires. It can also be used for, a whole host of things. And with the biggest being getting infrastructure into the ground. If we partner with the county, then what does that mean? It means that we backstop an EIFD with our general fund, both of our general funds. If we partner with the county, we could have infrastructure in the ground on some of these sites within 3 years. If the city goes alone, we're looking at about 8 years, and the city is willing to go ahead whether the county wants to be part of this or not, on an EIFD, it's just going to take us longer to get some of these sites developed. But what we get in return with very little risk is a tax sharing agreement on real estate and sales tax. And there are projections in the materials that you guys have that show what the county would net over. They list a 50-year period. My experience with tax increment finance is typically a district lasts about 30 years. who knows what happens down the road. And then there, now we have money freed up to do a whole host of things. You know, the largest of which is putting in infrastructure so we can get these sites developed.
Any questions from the board? Any thoughts?
So give us the scenario, 3 years versus 8 years. How does it pan out that way? Why, with the county, does it take to three, or you by yourself, or the city take it to eight?
Yep. So by backstopping in the EIFD with our combined power, we're able to get to a place where we can allow people to, to put in infrastructure now and can be paid back over time more quickly if we're backstopping this. Or because of our combined general funds, we're able to reap enough revenue and backstop it with our general funds to float a bond for some of this work. And that's it in a nutshell. But the other piece of this is if you form an EIFD, for things like affordable housing, for grants for wildfire mitigation, anything across the board, federal, state grants, you get priority when you're writing these grants because you have this in place. And when you form this district, you're showing your seriousness about putting infrastructure in place and about public improvements, and they showed that you made the first step in the right direction.
So, not to your credit for what I'm going to say next, because I'm going to remove you from that, but
okay. The
city of Mount Shasta's track record on developing, in particular, what is the old Roseburg property, and lost millions of dollars worth of grants, the track record's not good.
It's not, and the reason for that is a lack of infrastructure, and we've had people come in, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, where IKEA was looking at us, and ultimately the site was too small, that even somebody with that deep of pockets walked away because we weren't able to put in the infrastructure for them. We had to give back a federal grant, and it was the council politics at play in Mount Shasta at the time. I can't speak to it, it was before my time, but it's unfortunate. You give back a federal grant, and it takes a long time to build that trust to seek another grant, but that time has passed.
And with regard to Crystal Badger and the loss of that plant, I don't think that was infrastructure. What was the case there?
I need to be careful in how I nuance this. Let's just say there's a small percentage of the population in Mount Shasta that is willing to sue on just about anything. If you built a picnic bench and put it in your front yard, you're probably going to get a CEQA lawsuit. But where we're at now, we have one particular individual who's been the lead in most of these suits in a position where he lost on appeal a project that you may be familiar with, the Golden Eagle Charter School. And once this person has enough losses, and he does, the city can sue him as a frivolous litigant. And what that means is that if this person files again, the judge has to go and take a look at the merits of that filing quickly and decide whether or not to kick it out. In addition, under certain types of projects, affordable housing, there are some others, the state now requires, especially with frivolous litigants, that the suing party has to put up enough money to cover any potential loss or damages to any of the parties involved. And there was a recent case in Temecula where a citizens group was suing over CEQA, and the cost of them putting up that money stopped that lawsuit dead in its tracks.
And then lastly, I don't know what to call the property, but I don't think you've named it. It's the property westernly, north and westernly of the Highway Patrol. I think Frank Delgallo and partners own that property, which was county property decades ago, and it was brought into the city with the promise of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been interested parties, but the development of now a sewer line is millions of dollars on the cost of the landowner, which, why isn't this property being looked at as well?
It could be. It's been discussed, and you know, one of the issues here, and it goes down a little bit of a rabbit hole, is on this particular property, there are prepaid sewer hookups, right? And so while the lines that are in place are sagging and are doing very well, when you pay for prepaid sewer hookups, that is just allowing you access to the treatment plant. So, you know, right now it may be unfair, but under the law, it's the responsibility of that property owner.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that we can't include this in part of a package of an EIFD district.
Understood. I mean, it's freeway frontage, so it's kind of mind-boggling why the city hasn't looked at that property to develop for the tax revenue base that it could provide. I appreciate you being here. I mean, I'm a little nervous about the 45, 55 year out bit. I won't be here. I don't know, many of us in the room won't be here, but I think it's something, you know, that I can support the city taking on. I don't know that I'm ready to partner yet. I'll leave it there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Chief of Chris, any questions?
Yeah.
So again, if you can just grab, is the concept there, is that something you want to pursue, whatever? I don't want to get too in-depth because it's going to take a lot of work on the backside. So it's like, do we want to take a look at?
Suggest something here is...
Hold on. I want to go through the board.
Okay.
And get that, and
great.
We'll go from there.
So I respect that at one point in my life, I was going to pursue a career like you're doing as a manager.
Uh-huh.
And so I shadowed the Klamath Falls city manager, and he had not the same program, the same concept for Main Street. They used it to revitalize Main Street in Klamath Falls. Was a special tax, and then we get permits on paying for it. So familiar with the concept. I'll be in my 90s when this comes, so I'll be the one up here to hold accountable down the road on this one issue, although I probably won't care as much. But anyway, down the road.
But you'll be held accountable.
Well,
somebody will make you care.
But in regards to that, I respect that you bring this forward to us. Jokes aside, you need to extract us on that. I'd be interested in pursuing it and looking into it and back their work and see what it looks like. I can see this if it did happen or didn't happen, other counties or other cities or jurisdictions might be interested as well. So down the road, but I'll stop there.
So was there any thoughts?
I am all for infrastructure, whatever city it's in, because it's the only way we're going to grow. But I need to know more about how this program works. So the more information I can glean from it so I can understand it better, because the way I see it right now is what's in it for us. I'm not comfortable with saying here's our money.
Yeah.
Because I don't get how we benefit from it yet. Because I'll be old and dead by then. I don't get it. And I don't see how the county's going to benefit from it at this point. But yes, growth is important. The only way we're going to do it is by infrastructure. So absolutely, I need to know more.
Does there help anything?
It's just way too complex for me to weigh in, other than I'm still struggling with how government does things better than private, to tell you the truth. And I'm not ready to commit the county to anything like this long term without knowing the fiscal impacts of us, given the fact that I see that this isn't a tax, there's no tax to this, but somewhere 10% from the county's coming from somewhere, and I need to know where it is, and quite frankly, we don't have it.
So I will say this, highlight of my political career has been, will be to this day, when I was on the Board of City Council, City of Mount Shasta. I said, where's the for sale sign on that property at the Continental Landing? It's been vacant ever since. I live in that community. You know, I know it's, we have no growth. And there's a lot of this is predicated on growth and, you know, what decisions we make. I am willing to continue to get some more information and have it come back for a further discussion. That was the whole concept to move this forward for you. I know your council supports this. You know, for me, it's a tough road to hoe because, you know, and you saw where I just stated we spent $300,000 on that Ever Memorial, and all I get from the city, the constituents, is we're not doing our part. And on the same token, it's like we just spent $475,000 for a road and snowplow. We're grateful we finally get the Forest Service to start maybe, and you know, maybe we need to figure out a bigger strategy. To, you know, hey, I'm willing to do this if you're going to do this for us, type of thing. But I will tell you this, and now Congress did reach out to me, and I apologize. I've been too darn busy to get back to it. So at this point, my proposal would be just to kick it back to staff to get some further, some numbers, what this looks like, what's the growth rate, what does it do, what if this happens and it doesn't happen. Again, I will tell you, because I've been on that where the tire kickers come, and there is no infrastructure, which is the whole reason why we're in the predicament we're in. So I get that. I will also offer this, that, you know, Mount Shasta is a thriving community. Growth is key, I think, to, you know, property tax, indirectly property tax values is where we get our budget, so I think we need to look at it from that concept. But at this moment, that would be my proposal, just to move this forward so we can see how it plays out. You know, and maybe that includes cost by giving that presentation or sending some information. So with that, is the board okay with that, or they want to drop it dead, or any other proposal on the board to entertain?
I support that.
So is there a question? Rick?
Yeah, I'm okay.
I mean, we can spend a whole couple hours, and I'm, you know, I'm still haven't got my arms around it.
Right.
So I think I need a fully vetted staff report to pros and cons on each piece.
The
county's
report. You know, right. Up front.
Well, because it's going to take staff time. That's the key.
I would support it in a minimal staff time, just as a summary, not to get, you know, that you can at least scratch the surface on it. But I think that we also need to acknowledge there's more than infrastructure to why they're not developing or growing. The lawsuits that come are sending the message to the outside that you're not welcome here. And I don't support that. I think that growth comes from development, and we can do that in ways that benefit the community. And I think the other part that needs to be engaged in this, the schools completely ignore that they get 60% of the tax base. Yeah. And yet they charge $4.75 a foot to build a new house on top of that. And that's another factor that, you know, we have to look at it. Are we really welcoming new growth? And that's not on you. I'm sorry, you know, I'm just saying, you know, from my perspective, those are the battles that we have to overcome. We have to get the schools alongside of us as well.
It's a bigger issue. You know, I live in the community, I love the community, I support the community, but I'm going to use Crystal Geyser as an example. That costs nothing but staff time and headaches for this county. It, you know, it doesn't give me a warm, fuzzy feeling when I look at the picture of what this entails, because we need infrastructure there. That's an underutilized piece of property that should have high value, and bringing in resources not only to the city, but to the county.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and I know, you know, I know full well what we're up against. So does Supervisor Cobbs, because, you know, we've lived it all this whole time. So at this point, it's going to go back to staff. We can work further and vet it a little bit better.
Yeah.
And we'll somewhere in the near future, we'll have a fully agendized item, maybe with Cosmo here, and we'll get to an up or down position on that.
If it's worth everybody's time, I have the presentation that Cosmo gave to give you some pre-information, as well as a low, medium, and high look at what the county would net if they participated. This is over a 50-year time frame. You can pick your time frame you want.
Yeah.
Anyway, but thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we at least started the ball rolling.
And I can get, if you so choose, I can get Cosmon up here.
Work with our CAO, okay. we'll get up with a working plan. All right, I'm going to apologize to our department heads for Health and Human Services and Community Development. I'm going to move on to our public
hearing
piece to it, because unfortunately, Supervisor Cobbs needs to leave. So, apologies. I'll be happy to buy you a couple of copies somewhere down the line. Let's move on to item 11, public hearings. We are going to do quickly item A, community development. And my goal would be to get through the public hearings except for the item D, which is the 130 piece. Yeah, three names and street names.
Good morning, Shelley Gray, Assistant Planner. I'm here before you today regarding the JH Ranch is requesting three private roads serving their property, being named Joy Place, Jean Court, and Lily Loop. The project site is south of the city of Wairika. The unnamed roads are located on JH Ranch's parcel and currently provide access to lodging for their guests. Staff has determined that these roads, as defined in CAL FIRE 4290, standards should be named. It is staff's opinion that the naming of a road is not a project as defined by Section 15378 of the California Environmental Quality Act guidelines, and is therefore not subject to CEQA pursuant to CEQA guidelines, Section 15060C3. No public comments were received on this project. Staff recommends approving the proposed road names. There is a suggested motion in the packet.
Okay, thank you. Any correspondence, Wendy?
No correspondence received.
No proponents or opponents here? Public comment?
Sean, not online.
No rebuttals? Do we keep this hearing open?
No, we can close it. It's a resolution.
Okay, we're going to close it. Discussion by the board.
I think I've asked all the questions behind the scenes in here and in the public.
Is that a motion?
Just a bunch of screen signs. That's a motion.
I'll second.
And just to clarify, the motion in here says approve a resolution naming three unnamed roads. It's actually three separate resolutions that are being adopted.
There are three separate resolutions provided for you.
Thank you. So just I want to make sure they're all going to be three separate
yes,
resolutions.
Yes, there are three separate ones.
Thank you.
Submitted.
All righty. Okay, Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about vacation rentals next.
Thank you.
While she's walking up here, just so the public knows, my wife and I got a bed and breakfast a while back, and I asked if I could participate for that PPC. They said wait until you get a definitive plan. So when the Planning Commission did it, I sent it off, and still waiting word back from that PPC. They're working on it, so I had to recuse.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Haley Lane, Planning Director. So I wanted to highlight the work staff has been doing based on, you know, direction and, you know, requests from the Board of Supervisors. So I was able to attend the most recent McLeod CSD meeting to, you know, gain, you know, perspective from the CSD and members of the public on, you know, vacation rental items in general. In the staff report package, you'll see I've highlighted the main points that the CSD and members of the public, you know, mentioned. And basically, you know, on the CSD side, they had mentioned their 2021 letter. The comments and concerns related to that still stand, and so that's attached in your staff report package. One thing I wanted to emphasize, and the one thing that the CSD emphasized, is that, you know, they heavily rely on grant funding, and so there is a nexus, I guess, with the type of funding that they receive on primary and secondary homes. If there's a threshold that they, you know, have too many secondary homes, they actually, you know, lose out on funding. So I just wanted to make a note of that, you know, for further discussion. And generally, they're concerned, and this isn't, you know, this is more an enforcement issue, but, you know, off-street parking, trash, things like that. And, you know, the community feels that there are a lot of vacation rentals already. They support vacation rentals because it is, you know, a big part of their economy, but they also just wanted to stress that there should be some sort of regulation tied to vacation rentals. Some have felt that the 10% cap may be too high, and that, you know, a lot of these homes are, you know, from their point of view, being bought up as secondary homes, and so, you know, the residents are losing out on, you know, housing to live in that community. I also spoke with Gina from the Chamber of Commerce from McLeod, and so she had spoke with me based on her thoughts of just not necessarily from the point of the chamber, but really just the residents of the communities, and she is a resident of McLeod. and, you know, basically echoed the same sort of comments from the CSD that there needs to be some sort of, you know, regulation within McLeod, you know, and they support regulation of short-term rentals moving forward. At the last board meeting, it was a request to, you know, bring for a point of discussion Williamson Act and how that is tied into vacation rentals and how that's managed. And I just wanted to highlight, you know, the board, we readopted new guidelines December of 2022, and in the staff report package, I have highlighted our residential uses pertaining to Williamson Act. And so the board at that time decided that, you know, in order to rent out, you know, units on their Williamson Act land, it would have to be tied towards the ag, you know, the ag operation. So, you know, if you're working there, you know, for some sort of reason, then you would be able to rent that out on a short-term basis. I also wanted to highlight for discussion, you know, unhosted versus hosted rentals. And so in Siskiyou County, we only regulate, you know, unhosted rentals in the sense that you are renting out the entire home or the structure. We do not regulate if someone wants to rent out a room or two rooms within their homes if they live in that home. That is something at this point we do not regulate. Additionally, I just wanted to bring up, you know, recent changes, just because in state law there's been a lot of discussion on ADUs. Can you rent them out long term or not? There is a new law, Government Code 6585 2.2, basically stating that ADUs have to be rented out long term, and so that has been you know, a concern recently with you know, folks in ADUs and how they, you know, want to rent that out in the future. Additionally, it was also a request to put in our process related to complaints and enforcement related to vacation rentals, and so that is also in the staff report package. So that just highlights, you know, the request from last meeting. I wanted also to note for a point of discussion and direction from the board, I know everyone is on board with moving forward from a use permit process to like an activity operation permit process where it would go from property owner to property owner. And something I would like direction from the board is, you know, these use permits that are currently standing, should we grandfather them in, you know, or should we create some sort of sunset date program? So, you know, once the ordinance gets to a more final state, say something like, you know, you have 5 years or something to kind of get, you know, and apply for the new program, or the new process, excuse me. But that concludes my comments, so happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the board? Thoughts? Everybody over?
I support the sunset dates on the current use permits to bring them up to a current, if that's where we're headed with that.
Okay.
I would rather have everything be consistent than have an old and a new. Okay. If that's the way we're going to go with it.
Okay.
And the McLeod issue is, you know, it's an issue for McLeod, and I feel for those folks there. That community is, you know, is struggling. So I would see through that, you know, the dropping that 10% down to 5% cap, if that's what we can, if that's a workable number.
I apologize. Are you finished for the moment?
Sure.
I'll come back to you. I should have went to public comment first. So I want to go with Mike Bernstein. Right. I am confused. I'm trying to get Michael out of here. He's got a chore to do.
Hi. My name is Mike Burstyn, and I'm from Grenada Gardens in Miami. Some of you are familiar with the place. I printed out something before I came here. It's going to be easier for me to express what I want to discuss, if it's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead, continue on. You got 3 minutes here.
Um, Yeah, so I want to talk about the rental location. We are in a rural area, and I purchased a home next to the Rural Gardens community, so I can host families and friends of the residents who are living there. And I know there are some restrictions, and that's why I wrote this letter, so I'm going to read it out for you. So, dear county supervisors, I'm writing to respectfully request that the restrictions placed on short-term rental in Siskiyou County be reconsidered and potentially lifted. As a local business owner and operator of Grenada Gardens, I have experienced firsthand the negative impact that these restrictions have had on local businesses and the community. When I first acquired Grenada Gardens, it was in a state of neglect and disrepair. It was about 7 years ago. The community was outdated and did not have the needs of the seniors that lived there. I invested a big amount of money for renovations the last couple of years to bring it up to date and create a comfortable resort-style community for our residents. And now our community is now a very welcoming and vibrant place for seniors to call home. One of the challenges I faced is limited lodging options for families that are visiting here and they're visiting the residents. Because we're in a rural area, there's no any place where they can stay, and they come from out of town, they can't stay with the residents at Grenada Gardens. So the restrictions on short-term rental in the area have made it difficult to provide allocated housing options for residents' families. This has had a negative impact on the quality of our residents and has made it more difficult for families to stay connected with their loved ones during their time they stay with us. And moreover, as a business owner who employs many single mothers and homeless individuals, I know firsthand the challenges that these individuals face.
You have 3 minutes, so I'm going to give you another 30 seconds because the initial delay, but you need to wrap it up.
So in finding employment and providing for themselves and their families. So I'm dedicated to seeking more job opportunities and providing training and support to those in need. However, the restrictions on short-term rental limits our ability to provide adequate housing for our employees and make it more difficult to offer employment opportunities to those in need.
Okay.
So I'll stop here. And
thank you.
Rest.
I appreciate the written comments. That's helpful.
And I also want to invite everyone to one day come and see the improvement that we made for the seniors so you know what.
I appreciate the investment in the operation.
Thank you.
When did you tell someone?
Oh, just I wanted to add that we do have correspondence when we get to that point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that a question?
Yes. No. Darlene Mathis.
Darlene Mathis, and I'm here from McLeod, Vacation Rentals. I'm here just to speak and reiterate my letter that I sent to the supervisors. And as a business owner also, we own the Mercantile and the hotel. And like I was saying, we are not opposed to vacation rentals. However, those are some of my best shoppers. However, as a community citizen in McLeod, I feel there needs to be a balance and a thorough study of what's going on in McLeod. I'm just concerned that we just do a blanket approach to all these vacation rentals per town. I just don't think it's doing justice for McLeod. I'd like to see a map if we could actually study and see out of the 600 homes in McLeod, how many are actually second homes, how many are vacation rentals, and how many are full-time citizens. I think you might be surprised. And my whole thing is, as a past associate architect at the city of Sacramento 20 years ago, we used to do planning studies and all, and there's certain numbers for sustainable communities and towns. And we need to be able to keep our community and our schools and have employees. And then also have our visitors, have a nice place for the visitors. The other thing is that the already McLeod, we already have the highest TOT tax. So we have 14% versus 12% in all the other towns. Then on top of it, we have more, we'll have the highest cap that's being proposed compared to all the other towns. So we're asking, why are we different? Why the 10%? They're saying we have 3.9% vacation rentals, which I don't believe. And I think you're taking the rest of the unincorporated part of the county and then putting us together instead of looking at us as one town. So that's my question to staff and the board, where they came up with the 3.9%, and maybe if we could study it a little bit longer instead of voting on something today from a file.
Thank you. Anyone online?
Sure, not online.
I see a hand raised. If you're going to come up and speak, you've got to fill out a form and come up and do it.
Okay.
You can fill the form up afterwards. You've got 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm Angelina Cook. I live in McLeod. I submitted a letter. Hopefully you had a chance to review it. I want to emphasize how difficult it is to find rentals to live in McLeod, especially after COVID. Pre-COVID, it was not difficult. Now it's nearly impossible. I lost my rental during COVID, and it took me a full year to find another place to live. Luckily, I finally did find one. And I want to, because I love McLeod and I want to stay there, I want to emphasize what Darlene mentioned about the number of vacant homes we have that aren't even vacation rentals. There's, I think, that something that makes it even more difficult in McLeod is how many second, third, fourth homes are there that are primarily vacant, not even vacation rentals. So there's an extreme shortage of housing in McLeod. And because we are not incorporated, we don't have a planning department, we don't have a jurisdiction for economic development. And until we do that, I think a 10% cap on a on vacation rentals would completely squeeze out any new young families that want to live in McLeod. I know the existing Forest Service and accommodations and the businesses that are functional in McLeod really have a difficult time finding locations for their employees to live. So I urge you, please, don't stick us with a 10% cap and give us a chance to redevelop in a way that will serve McLeod and the county. Thank you.
Anyone else? On public comment. Still no one online?
Sure,
no
one online.
Okay. I don't close the hearing on this. Does this be the first reading still?
Well, no. This has been a public hearing that's been continued just for discussion and input.
So, okay. So I'm going to go back to Supervisor Ogren to start off the
where
question.
Where was I? I forgot. So one of the other things I did want to talk about was the fact that, you know, we all realize that we have a housing plan and our plan that you've been working on you hope to get back to. Mm-hmm. And we want housing. Mm-hmm. We're all talking about housing. And we hope that workforce housing isn't part of that plan. And we can bring some of that to the McLeod area because that's what we need more than anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with that in mind, we hope that we can work not only the short-term rental piece to it, but also the housing piece, and that will help that community out a lot. So I'm just going to leave it there.
Michael? I think McLeod in particular, because thankfully we've finally heard from, you know, different sides in McLeod.
Sure.
And tend to agree with the new comments that we've received, that it is an impact to that community. So I would support just leaving the moratorium in McLeod until we know more about what's going on in there, because I know that housing is a problem. Last year I heard from ski park staff that even getting temporary housing for long-term but short-term for the winter season was nearly impossible in McLeod, and even for even Mount Shasta, you might as well forget it. But McLeod is kind of one of the bedroom communities that look to be able to supply that demand. But vacation rentals are, at any rate, I think that we need to keep the moratorium in place. I guess leave it at that.
Okay. I appreciate what you did for my district in the zone concept that's in the staff report.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody out there may not know, I mean, my district's in a different place from the standpoint of we have a large influx of seasonal workers with Forest Service and other agencies that come in, and Happy Camp in particular has a serious shortage for seasonal things, and I think this is one way to shore that back up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was good news for me here on the ADUs. I applaud that effort. A lot of folks here weren't here for that discussion. I voted no on adopting the state law. It really didn't mean anything, but from the standpoint of the state stepping on the requirements in the Scott Valley Area Plan, that's why I voted no on that some months ago. I need to understand, I guess, a little more about McLeod from the standpoint of, you know, I'd like to buy some property there too, because I like McLeod as well. But well, you can't find anything for sale, but there appears to be a lot of private land around that could be developed, and I don't understand, there's such a critical shortage for housing, why there isn't any kind of development taking place outside what's McLeod proper. So it'd be good to know, you know, and I haven't heard that discussion here at the board level.
Okay.
But I'm, you know, from a McLeod standpoint, I'm going to defer to the rest of the board what direction they want to go to, because it's obviously outside of their district.
Well, I would just say this, you know, it's, you know, McLeod has become a captivating place to be. You know, I personally, I would have moved there when I first moved here, but it was not a AT&T service territory. It's a citizen's territory at that time. But when you talk about housing, that's an issue countywide. You know, all you got to do is go to Desert. It's no different than McLeod. Can't find housing. People are getting forced out. You know, you talk about vacant homes. Person's right not to rent their home. I mean, you can't regulate that. You know, I think the thing we're up against, we just had a discussion on EIFD. I mean, you can't get projects done in this county, particularly in South County, without some oversight, backlash on that. You know, it's up to a builder to build houses, but the market's not there for all the effort that they got to go through to build a house. I can get you $1 million house built, because that's where the market is. It's why I support, you know, keeping the 2.5 acre minimum in Mount Shasta. You know, it's going to exacerbate everything that goes on there. So when we talk about housing, you know, I appreciate where McLeod's coming from, but, you know, open the blinders a little bit about what I'm up against. Dunsmuir, my community, my wife works at Dunsmuir Elementary. Teachers can't take the job because they can't find the housing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I get that, but it's not government's role to build houses, help facilitate them somehow. So I think that's a bigger picture. Hopefully stuff that comes out of the general plan update, how we facilitate those kind of things.
Absolutely.
So at this point, you know, I wanted to touch bases on the 10% cap versus, you know, because to me, I think everything should be equal.
Sure.
I think you said 3.9% of the vacancy rate. Didn't we double that is what the ratio was?
Sure.
So maybe you could explain that, because I think that was one of the questions. Where did that come from?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, when we were working with Housing Tools on the analysis report, they had pulled some additional data for us, which, you know, basically divvied up different regions. So they looked at census tracts and, you know, pretty much the percentage of vacation rental listings to total units of that area. So that's where that 3.99% number came from. You know, if the board is interested, I can work with staff to kind of pull some other additional housing data, so maybe we can get a different type of picture percentages of what's really happening, because sometimes it can kind of be a little bit confusing with vacancy rate and things like that. But, you know, to compare Mount Shasta, Dunsmuir, Weed, you know, their vacancy rate ratio was like 1.9% or something, so a little bit lower than the McLeod region.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things that we talk about, vacancy rates and all those things, and, you know, we talk about vacation rentals. It's only the permitted ones that we're tracking.
Yes,
you go online,
exactly.
There's plenty of unpermitted that, you know, and sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we're a poor rural county. We don't have capacity to do what we want to do, right? Which is
with
track all this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so it's like, I think that was the initial thing about charging a fee to type thing, but we
sure.
discounted that because that's onerous on the people that are trying to comply.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I sort of want to comment.
Yeah.
You did ask about permits and how it follows the land, I guess. You know, I've always been perplexed with that, as I sit on this board, from
mm-hmm.
the standpoint of why do we do that from the standpoint of accepting a permit that was written 20 years ago without being able to update it or at least do a periodic review, at least when it changes hands.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that's right, that we should be revisiting that.
Sure. Well, within land use planning, it all just goes back to everything running with the land. But obviously, you know, municipalities have, you know, the authority to kind of change things with, you know, certain programs. So that's why we're, you know, discussing this activity operational permit to, you know, move from property owner to property owner, because I think that does make a little bit more sense with this specific type of program versus, you know, a development project that occurs over a long period of time, you know, like a mixed-use building or something, right, where you have some commercial, and, you know, that makes sense to have those types of land use permits, but I do agree it's easier to manage and, you know, work with vacation rentals when it's property owner to property owner, and it would be easier for staff to kind of get a better picture of, you know, how to manage that program.
Appears to me that that's a more responsible way to manage these.
Yeah, especially with, you know, the change of housing, right? That's, I mean, that occurs more, you know, more reoccurring than, you know, commercial properties or certain development properties.
So within this, it does, we are following that the use permit, if granted to a new project, it would just stay with the landowner, and then once they're, if they sell or whatever, it would restart.
That's what we'll be moving to, with vacation rentals, is property owner and property owner.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Definitely.
Was that the question regarding grandfathering in?
Oh, yes. I wanted to, so the thoughts on if we should grandfather in the use permits or, you know, over in like the idea of a sunset date, so when everything is final, we can, you know, allow folks however many years or something to come to the new program.
Would that require a cost on the ones that are currently
so
abiding by the law?
Yeah, I've seen counties do it different ways where the cost is reduced, or it's the same cost, but they allow, you know, 5 years or something like that for folks to get into compliance. So it's completely up to the board on how you'd want that process to look, and I could draft something up.
I think it's
discussion. Phased
in over time. I
mm-hmm.
don't think you could do it. I guess it's not unlike what you're doing with the Williamson Act. You're kind of bringing everybody in, even though that is a cost.
Sure.
Which I get, but with, you know, those that have been compliant on the vacation rentals, I think, you need to kind of bring in, whether it's a sunset or they get into the flow of it, like you're trying to propose.
Sure.
The other thing on the Williamson Act, can you clarify that? Were you saying not to do this, or that the board has the opportunity to allow that within the Williamson Act?
Sure. I mean, the board definitely has the opportunity to update the guidelines again, and we can rewrite some, that differing language in the Williamson Act, and then you would have to approve and adopt that. But currently, as it's written, the only way that property owners are able to rent out units on their property short term is if it's tied to, you know, the agricultural operation that's occurring
mm-hmm.
on site. So that's something we can definitely look at too, if that's the wish of the board.
Okay. I mean, I'm interested in that only because we've had, it's coming up.
Yes.
I think it's at least worth pursuing to see whether the board supports something along that order or not.
Okay.
My sense of the Williamson Act is not that critical to the overall picture because it's, you know, they're agricultural pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to do anything that's going to inhibit what they're trying to do to survive to
sure.
everyone else. But,
sure.
Getting back to, you know, I think my initial thought would be to, because these people are that are abiding, I'm willing to grandfather them in.
Okay.
But I'll go along with the majority of people because.
Yeah, I think you grandfather them in, but bring them in. To
okay.
Yeah.
I guess I would need to know how to put that look like. What the
okay,
would
I can. Mean. I can. Some additional information
I see. My comments reflect, you know, kind of what hits my desk. You know, I don't get general comments about Williamson Act to me that there should be a lot of use permit stuff. And we place a great deal of scrutiny on the Williamson Act piece on this board. You know, and I just don't see that scrutiny on the use permits. And I, whatever that looks like, you know, I think we need to do something similar to what we've been doing with the compliance checks.
Okay.
Periodic compliance checks.
Okay, absolutely.
Well, I think like anything else, it's like we had the Williamson Act, we didn't revisit it. Just like same thing, we need to revisit some of the stuff.
Yeah.
And I, whatever that policy we come up with, I would look to staff every 5 years, whatever it is.
Sure.
Because boards change, times change, things change, you know. Mm-hmm. McLeod was a working mill town, for God's sakes. We would be discussing this if it was a working mill town.
Right.
Yeah. So things change, and we need to adapt and roll with that and put in the flexibility. Again, I'm going to go to the person that bought the house, loves their house, but doesn't want to rent it. Mm-hmm. That's their right. You know, we're not going to regulate that.
Sure.
And so that factors into the vacancy rate or lack of housing. You know, again, we're up against that uniformly, particularly in South Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I haven't figured out, and I would just say this publicly, my biggest priority is figuring out a housing piece to the equation, because, yes, we have homelessness, but we also have workforce housing. Ski park can't get people, mills can't get people, you know, the whole thing. It's all into one. You know? So at this point, where would the board like to go? Yes, Wendy, did you want to add some comments?
I do need to add that we had correspondence received this last go-round.
Yes.
And I want to put it in the record. We had received at the clerk's office vacation rental comments from Angelina Cook, Shelley Kane with the Mount McLeod Elementary School, Darlene Mathis, and Sarah Dillon.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
I did see all of those. Ms. Lang, what would you like, what would you need from us right now? Decision-wise, or you need to come back with some more info?
Sure, I'd like to come back maybe potentially beginning of July, some sort of, with additional information related to McLeod, so we can kind of further that discussion to really drill down the policy piece for that area. And I'd also, for the other two regions, like to come back with potentially what this process is going to start looking like, what elements would be in the zoning ordinance, so we can kind of start moving towards that direction, if that's all right.
Board okay with that?
Basically, we have one meeting in July. Well,
that'll be it.
One regular meeting,
it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And does that mean closing this hearing or continuing the hearing to that date?
We can
I would say continue the
continue
hearing.
Continue it.
I don't want to hit restart on this because I think public input, continued public input,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that's just fair and valid.
And I believe it's July 11th.
Okay, so July 11th.
Thank you, Ms. Lane.
Thank you.
Good job, as always.
Thank you.